For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Time to bring in Bill Shanks, the host of the Bill Shanks Show, 3 to 7, Monday through Friday, 93.1 FM in Macon, 99.5 FM in Warner Robins. You can also read Bill's work, TelegraphMacon.com. Who let the dogs out? There you go. All right, Bill.
Sorry.
That's okay. I love
they're
it, man.
Control. They're so excited about Sunday, they can't shut up.
That's right. Yeah. How many you got? How many dogs you got?
Too damn many. How many is that?
I hear you, man. I hear you. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Can't wait for Sunday. It's a remarkable time to be alive in America. It's going to be a fun couple of days, and it's going to be amazing to think about. It's like a dream that we're here, but if the Cubs can win the World Series and Donald Trump can upset Hillary Clinton, heck, anything's possible.
Hey, so what time are you and Sam meeting at the Park Tavern there for that viewing party? Oh, my goodness.
For tomorrow?
Well, yeah, I guess it was. Is that Saturday?
No, it's the Park Tavern in Atlanta is hosting the Packers pep rally on Saturday.
I don't know if you've heard about that.
Oh, really? Okay. Wow, really? Well, yeah. You know, there's a lot of Packers fans, I'm sure, around the country and around Atlanta, since Atlanta's now the melting pot of the world. It's no longer a southern city. And you know, look, I like the Packers. Packers are kind of my number two team after going up there a couple of years ago, but not on Sunday at 3:05. They're the enemy.
Amen.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And if you have a little free time today, go find that tweet and the responses that the public of Atlanta gave to the Park Tavern for that. It is a high quality reading.
Yeah, just make sure you allot yourself like 15 or 20 minutes though, because you'll get sucked into it. With all the comments, it's good stuff.
So a restaurant is getting together a lot of Packers fans to come there to watch the game.
Well no, this is on Saturday. It's like a pep rally for Packers fans.
Oh, a pep rally.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Well, they should be closed down on Monday. If there's any politicians, any cojones in Atlanta, they'd close them down on Monday. There's health issues there at that restaurant, right? I mean, salmonella's coming up. I mean,
that might happen.
All over the place. Come on.
That might happen. By the way, it's kind of funny that we talk about NFC Championship games, and the Falcons are going to be making their fourth appearance since 1998. So it's funny when you look. The Redskins haven't been since 91. The Cowboys haven't been since 95 in the NFC Championship game. And, you know, even like the Rams – well, they went 0-1, but still, I mean, isn't that hard to believe that that you know, the Falcons considered one of the worst franchises in the league, and yet now they have been to a Super Bowl. This will be their fourth NFC Championship game in essentially the last 20 years. But when you got some of these blue blood franchises that haven't been in so long, it kind of makes you think a little bit differently about the Falcons.
It does, and particularly compared to the first, 66 to 98, the first 32 years, they had no trip to the championship game. And then now, right in the last, I guess, 18 years, they've had four trips.
Yeah.
So you're almost at a little over about, I guess, every four and a half years, you're going to play for a championship. I had someone send me a note the other day that since the Falcons – I assume it's since the Falcons started their franchise in 1966. But anyway, the note was, out of the last 18,000, I don't know what it was, 365 days, this will be the fourth day that the Falcons will play for a chance to go to the Super Bowl. That kind of was daunting to think about that.
Yikes.
You know, that we've only had 4 days that we've led up to something like this, which, you know, it's remarkable. It's a remarkable story, and you know, to go back in history to think, we were telling stories yesterday of that day in '99 when they beat Minnesota, and I had people calling me up telling me stories about, you know, where they were when Morton Anderson kicked the field goal, and just the craziness that ensued after knowing, you know, and that was the thing back then. And I know it's hard to fathom to a certain extent for someone like Sam, who's younger and didn't go through the 1980s and even earlier than that, this franchise of what that kick meant and how that changed something to just simply get there. And, you know, it's funny, you kind of felt like, well, they'll get back, and they haven't. And here's another chance to try to get back, and it's it is amazing of how this franchise has been through it over the years, and this fan base, the heck with the franchise. The players have changed, the colors have stayed the same, the uniforms have changed a little bit, the stadiums have changed, but these poor fans are the ones that have been through it for decades.
I mean, I was saying this the other day. I mean, you just look at everything, like, you're to piggyback on what you're saying, just look at everything this fan base has been through and the team has been through with, you know, a quarterback being thrown in the federal penitentiary for dogfighting. Walter Payton, like, man of the year, getting arrested the night before the Super Bowl. Bobby Petrino, Jim Mora saying he would leave the Falcons in the middle of a Super Bowl run to go coach Washington. I mean, just so many crazy things have happened. And for the last game in the Georgia Dome to be the NFC Championship, it's just wild.
It's amazing. And, you know, I'll even go back further than that, Sam. And, you know, I'm only 1978 and beyond, so the pre-1978 people could probably give you even more examples of the crap that went on for the first 13 years of the franchise. With the Smith family and all they went through, and the ups and the downs, and the quarterbacks they went through before Bart came on. But, you know, the Dallas game in 1981, which was a few days after Georgia had won the national championship, and ironically, right before Ronald Reagan was inaugurated, that all kind of happened in a three-week span there. But anyway, you know, the Dallas game is something that longtime fans of this franchise. I mean, I was a child. I was 10 years old when it happened, and it was the only time I remember crying about a game in my life was the Dallas game, and it was just heartbreaking. And, you know, you think of that. You think of the 80s. The 1980s Atlanta Falcons, there was nothing. I mean, they had, after that Dallas game, they went into a tailspin. Lehman Bennett got fired. They brought in Dan Henning. That was a disaster. They had Steve Barkowski, who was unceremoniously dumped out of the franchise by Dan Henning, who will burn in hell one day for that. Then Marion Campbell, the years that the Swamp Fox was the head coach, and he was not a head coach. He was a great defensive coordinator for Atlanta and for Philadelphia, but not a head coach. And then, you know, it wasn't until Jerry Glanville got there in 90 or whatever that they turned it around to some extent. Then, you know, you think about the June Jones years with the tumultuous Jeff George era of Falcons football and what they went through. And then finally Dan came in there and you felt like there was a head coach finally that belonged there, that was a real deal head coach. And then they finally did reach that goal. So, no, it's been this franchise, unlike the Braves, even unlike the Hawks, this franchise of the three, not counting the Flames and Thrashers, have been through more than anybody.
Now, you mentioned this being the fourth NFC Championship game appearance for the Falcons. I think this is probably the best team they fielded in an NFC Championship game. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think so. And I was looking back at the roster for 99, the game against Minnesota, and the game then, particularly against San Francisco a couple years ago. And I think what sets us apart a little bit is the options on offense for the quarterback compared to what Chandler had, what Vic had, and even what Matt had in 2013. The number of players he has at his disposal with the two-headed running back situation. You know, 4 years ago, Michael Turner was at the very end of his tenure as the Falcons running back, and he really wasn't very effective. The defense obviously has changed from week one. You know, you got to go back and remember, and I've got to find it, the flip card that they give us the games for the Tampa Bay game, which was awful. And I came on this show and said, my God, this was an awful performance. They were 3-8 at the end of last year after starting 5-0, 1-3 in the preseason, and now they start off with a clunker of the game. And, but, you know, that defense was very different then. They had Derek Shelby on the line of scrimmage. They did not have Keanu Neal yet. He was hurt. Jalen Collins was out, suspended. Weatherspoon and Warlow were still starting at linebacker before Jones and Campbell came in. You know, Brian Poole hadn't obviously emerged as a significant player for them on defense. I mean, Beasley was – we were kept on waiting on Beasley to emerge and do something. You know, show something, Vic, that can do something to make us know that you're legit. So even from week one, it's changed dramatically. But I think looking back on the defense this 4 years ago, you know, John Abraham didn't play against Seattle and San Francisco 4 years ago because Mike Smith let him play in the season finale, and he got hurt. And so that was probably your best player. They had Ashley Ambrose. They had Dunter Robinson. They had more veteran players. But I think with what they've got right now and the increasingly improving, to use a little alliteration, defense, I mean, every week it seems like they're getting better. I'll be tested like crazy this week, but I like these young players a great deal.
Bill Shanks joining us here, as he always does, 9:05 on Thursdays. All right, I want to get your – we're all fired up for the Falcons, but I got to get your thoughts on the news last night about Tim Raines and Pudge Rodriguez and Jeff Bagwell. Do you feel like this is now the beginning of guys that have been connected to PEDs are going to start letting those guys in the Hall of Fame and that Bonds and Clemens will eventually get in? Since, you know, you've got Bagwell and Pudge that, you know, even though they weren't, I guess, considered the bigger names of PEDs, but they were both kind of connected to it there a little bit. So, I mean, what do you think's going to end up happening now? Do you think Bagwell should have gotten in?
I do, and I think he was a phenomenal player. I think it is a sign. I think even more so than Pudge and Bagwell getting in, it was the percentage that we saw for Clemens and Bonds in the 50s. You know, I think that shows an upward trend. Usually when you see those upward trends, you're going to see the player get in at some point. And I think they belong in there. I mean, I think, unfortunately, in a way, I think that when Bud Selig was put in the Hall of Fame, that kind of gave people an excuse to vote for the PED connectors, if you will, the people who were connected to the PEDs. And, you know, look, without having direct knowledge of exactly who used what, it's so hard to indict people. And you know, Piazza was indicted even though there was no evidence, but he was in that era, and he was big, and he was powerful, and he was strong, and he hit home runs where, you know, he probably should have gone in before he did, but there may have been some that kept him off their ballot because of the potential connection that had no evidence. I think you just can't keep them out. There are plenty of people that you can suspect and wonder about. Hopefully that era of baseball is gone now where people are doing it more on their own instead of having help. But I just don't think you can keep these players out. And I still go back to the thought that before there was any link to PEDs with Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens, those were two of the best players in the game. Barry Bonds was a tremendous talent. Before he got big, before his head swelled, before he started hitting 70 home runs, he was going to go in the Hall of Fame because at that point when he first came up, going to the Hall of Fame meant you hit 500 home runs, and he was a shoo-in for that. And then whatever spurred him on, whether it was the Sosa-McGuire battle in 98 that encouraged him to do that so he could be in that same limelight, whatever. He was a phenomenal talent, and so was Clemens. He was one of the best pitchers of our generation. And so I think they belong in the Hall of Fame.
Talking with Bill Shanks.
We'll get there.
Yeah, and obviously we can, you know, kind of take a look at next year with the class that went in this year. I think that, you know, Chipper Jones, who's eligible, obviously he's going to get in, and I would think that Vladimir Guerrero and Trevor Hoffman will probably get in next year too, who just missed out on it this year. But one guy that's eligible next year, Andrew Jones, I find a very interesting case. I mean, maybe offensively he doesn't have the numbers that some of the other guys have, but this is, if not the best, one of the best defensive center fielders of all time.
Absolutely. I think that Andrew Jones will get in the Hall of Fame at some point. Sam, I don't know how long it'll take. It may be one of those years where there's not a whole lot of great shoo-in candidates, and it allows people to say, hey, let's go ahead and put Andrew in there. You know, he dropped off tremendously, you know, at the end of his career offensively, which is a shame because I think he would have been a shoo-in for 500 home runs himself if he had not fallen off so harshly offensively at the end of his career. I remember coming on this show, David, with you years ago, and when Andrew was still the Braves, we were like, what is wrong with him? How could he go from, what was it, 50-something and then 40-something home runs to nothing? And we were like, what in the world? And it was in his walk year, his contract year, and we just couldn't believe that a player would fall off that much. But and he never recovered. He never. It's not like he had a bad second half or a bad year and came back and recovered. He just lost it offensively, whether it was because of the wear and tear on his body from what he did early in his career or what. But he was a phenomenal talent. It's a shame that his offensive numbers did kind of tail off there at the end. But defensively, I mean, we could talk about Ender Inciarte. We could talk about Jason Hayward and Otis Nixon, but there's only one defensive king for me when it comes to Atlanta Braves, because on a nightly basis, we saw that cat make plays that became routine, that in any other ballpark for any other player would have been the type of play that they would have played the Superman music for every time. And if you need any testimony of how good he was, ask Greg Maddux, John Smoltz, and Tom Glavine. They'd probably tell you better than we could.
Yeah, I just remember that, like you're talking about there, the struggles there. And I remember those swings where he would sink down to one knee, and it was just painful to watch.
Yeah, he just lost it. There's no other way to describe how what happened to his numbers offensively. You don't see that very often. I mean, it was hard to even compare in that year of what was 06-07 of whenever it was his last year with Atlanta, when he, you know, it was like how many players at that age, which he was around 30, 31, I mean, he was in his early 30s, how many players at that age would have that kind of track record in their contract year have this kind of season? And that was even hard to find then. But to find even a player who just totally lost it offensively, especially after having the 40 and 50 home run seasons there the year before that, it was unparalleled almost. And it was a shame because, again, I remember sitting down, funny how the things you remember sometimes, I remember sitting down when Andrew was, you know, having those great home run seasons, and he was in his early 30s, and I was projecting, okay, let's be very conservative and say he hits 30 home runs through his 39th birthday on average, even if they were to play longer. He was going to be at over 600 home runs, and I think, what was he, 418 or something that he may finish at or something of that nature. But, you know, it's amazing in how his numbers did fall off.
Hey, by the way, we were going to ask you, too, it's not really, because we'd known about the Braves moving and spring training, but they'll be going to down to Sarasota now? Is that definitely going to happen?
Sounds like it, yeah, sounds like it.
Okay. And are you all good with that?
As long as it's near a beach.
Well, you are in Florida. Although I guess the place they're in now, I guess technically isn't near a beach. It's about as far as you can be from one in that state, I guess.
Well,
it isn't very far.
Orlando was good because, when I would go down, I mean, I would go because, I need to work on my tan as much as possible. I would go and go to Cocoa Beach. And then I'd go on the other side to the Gulf of Mexico side. So that was kind of in the middle. But I think somebody told me the other day or yesterday, Sarasota is like 40 minutes from the beach, so I'll be good to go.
Oh, is it? Okay, it's that far. All right. See, I didn't even realize that.
But it should be nice. I mean, it should be a nice facility. It'll be a little bit longer trip for everybody who goes down to Florida to see them, whether it's like me and covers the team or if you go down and everybody should go to spring training. It's a tremendous time. If you love baseball, it is a tremendous time where it's just laid back and it's fun. It's not there's not pressure on anybody because the games don't count, and you can watch the minor leaguers. You can kind of see everybody, and if you're an autograph hound, I mean, I think back of how it was as a kid wishing I could have gone to spring training. I remember a friend of mine who actually, his dad, had took him to Fort Lauderdale when the Yankees were over there, and he came back and showed me this baseball with all the 79 Yankees signed to it. I'm like, oh, my God, I want to go to spring training. It's just a great time if you love the game to go down there.
Now, moving is obviously one thing, and, you know, being closer and everything like that, but is there anything you're going to miss about the wide world of sports and Disney?
I'm going to miss the Colombian restaurant celebration in Florida. That's all I'm going to miss.
Oh, yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
That's about it. That's about it. I mean, they've got great food there, and no, I mean, you know, it's nice. It's not a bad thing. It's West Palm Beach, where they were for the first 30 years of their existence. It was old time baseball. It was old time spring training. It was not corporate. I mean, this is corporate, and any spring training you go now is going to be corporate compared to what used to be in spring training. I think the last. You know, Dodger Town's closed down in Vero. Winter Haven had the Red Sox for years, and then Cleveland for years. And we're just talking about old time parks and the old time baseball and just things that were about the past and about memories. And that's gone. That's gone. I mean, you know, you look at any spring training game on television, whether it's in the Cactus League or Grapefruit League, and it's corporate, it's high dollar. It's, you know, you used to could buy spring training tickets for cheap, and now it's just no way. They're going to be really expensive, and so I think, and I'm sure that new place will be the same way. And I mean, they got to pay for it, so it'll be expensive to go there. But Disney was good. I mean, it was a good place. It was a good area. It was always something to do in Orlando when you went down there. I mean, the area where they are at is just filled with restaurants. I mean, there's a lot of great memories there, and I've been down there a lot. And but I mean, it's, you know, I think I missed West Palm more than I'll probably miss this place, to be honest with you, except the Columbia restaurant in Celebration, Florida.
All right, Bill, you're the man. We appreciate it, and we will we'll catch you again next week.
All right, go Falcons. Talk
That's right, later. Go Falcons. Bill Shanks.
Rise up.
Absolutely, absolutely. And you can catch Bill 3 to 7 every Monday through Friday, 93.1 FM in Macon, 99.5 FM in Warner Robins, and you can read Bill's stuff at thetelegraphmacon.com.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.